Caller 10 at 800-636-1067. Congratulations, you are a winner. You're going to win two tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. IndyCar zooms into history with the first ever race around the National Mall this weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get race ready with all the information you need to know at freedom250gp.com. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. We will cover the NFL, the Commanders, but we got to start on the hardwood. And with the Wiz after a trade yesterday, Greg Finberg, Bullets Forever, to get us started. Greg, tell us about the deal to bring in a new point guard, too.
Yeah, so pretty surprising move, to say the least, but the Wizards decided that they wanted to get in on this five-team trade centered around a Peyton Watson sign-in trade. To the Cavs, they needed another guard after trading Jaden Hardy and D'Angelo Russell in deals that netted them a forward and Chris Middleton, a center and DeAndre Ayton. Behind Trae Young, Trey Johnson, and Bob Carrington needed another guard and decided to send out Cam Whitmore, who was buried in the depth chart as one of those wings, probably the last of the wings to get minutes this season, probably wasn't going to play much this season, and said we would like to move him so we can get Trey Mann, who's a combo guard, can play point guard, I think probably better suited as a off-ball guard, but definitely another scoring option, gives them some depth there. They also picked up a second-round pick in 2027 via the Clippers. There's a lot of contingencies on that, so can't really tell for sure which team is sending them that pick, but they pick up another second-round pick in 2027, which makes 3 seconds for them now next season, and some cash as well. Ended up also giving out Julian Reese to the Nuggets to make the trade work, but again, they had too many wings, so Whitmore wasn't going to play. They didn't have enough guards. They needed depth there, and they were able to pick up a second-round pick in the process. So not going to move the needle maybe too much in terms of their competitive window, but definitely a trade that you can understand when it comes to the construction of this roster.
Greg, Wizards fans maybe just kind of catching up here. Sports fans in general might be. What happened with Russell Westbrook, flirtation, now retirement, and then they kind of pivoted, it seems, to go find some guard depth?
It seems, again, like you mentioned, that they had been in on trying to find a move to bring in another guard. They certainly need a true point guard to back up Trae Young. And the report from ESPN was that the Wizards offered Russell Westbrook a 2-year deal. They also had an offer from the Sacramento Kings, and he decided to retire. The reporting was that, although the Wizards offered him multiple years on the deal, that he didn't necessarily like the role that they were offering him, which it's fair. You know, they have Trae Young, who's going to be their starting point guard. They have Bob Carrington. They have Trey Johnson and Will Riley as other guys that are capable of playing guard. They also have guys like Keyshawn George that can play on ball. So I'm sure the role that they were offering Russell Westbrook wasn't a certified 9-10-man rotation role. It was kind of a backup guard role, and let's see if we need you, you know, if you can step up and obviously fill that void. And it seems like Russ decided that retirement was the better route for him, and he had a great career, including one stop in D.C. where he averaged a triple-double, but it seems like the role probably just wasn't the best fit for him at the time in his career.
Greg, I really wanted to see Will Riley get a chance as a backup point guard, and there's obviously going to be less opportunity in minutes for that. Do they seem like they're not interested in that? Even John Wall, I've heard, come out and talk about that, and it's something I've always kind of thought could work.
I mean, in summer league, he started at point guard for them. The games that he played in summer league, he played decently well at point guard. And towards the end of last season, despite the Wizards going 1-27 over the final 28 games, he had a lot of minutes at point guard. So I think they understand that he's capable and they aren't afraid to play him there. But he definitely has a ways to go in terms of his processing and his decision making, in terms of running an offense. Obviously, Trae Young will get the keys with a starting unit. You have Will Riley, who's a potential option, Keyshawn George, who can play off on-ball minutes when Trae Young's not on the floor. You certainly have Bob Carrington, who has a decent bit of experience playing point guard. You now enter in Trey Mann, who has a couple of years of experience playing both point guard and shooting guard. So I think Riley's definitely capable. I think the Wizards aren't afraid to play him there, and I guess we'll see when training camp rolls around if that's going to be Carrington's position, if it's going to be Will Riley at the backup point guard spot, or if they'll look to give Trey Mann some run at some point.
Greg, what's a success for Anthony Davis, Rich Paul, the Wizards this year? Like, what's everyone's ideal vision, and do those line up?
I think you got a lot of information from August 6th, which was the first day that Anthony Davis could sign that 4-year, $275 million max contract extension. You had a report from ESPN that said it was a mutual decision. That's Shams coming out and saying that not only do the Wizards not want at the moment to give Anthony Davis a deal when he has only played 71 games over the last two seasons, they want to see him be healthy, they want to see how he pairs up with Sarr, but also that Anthony Davis wants to see if the Wizards can be competitive. I have a little bit of an issue believing that, just because I think if the Wizards presented Davis with $275 million right now, I think he'd sign it. I think it's more so the Wizards just aren't in the business of extending him when he isn't available as much, and they just want more information as to whether he will work with this team and whether or not he can stay healthy. So I think from the Wizards' perspective, they like where they're at, and they'll give him an extension possibly if he fits, or if he's healthy and if he fits with this team. And for Davis, I think, you know, it's a good situation for him to be in. He'll play good, meaningful minutes on a solid team. But I think he obviously is eyeing that extension. And if he plays well enough, I think he should get something probably in that realm.
Greg, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Always outstanding talking about the Wiz. Let's talk football. Mike Jones of The Athletic covers the National Football League. Mike, I'm wondering, I don't know how much you would even call these competitions, but do we know yet who's starting for the Cleveland Browns, Watson versus Shedeur Sanders, or the Falcons, Tua versus Penix? I guess Penix isn't even healthy enough right now to push Tua, is he?
Yeah, these are like two of the worst quarterback competitions in the history of the NFL, I feel like. Because in Cleveland, it sounds and feels like they want Deshaun Watson to win that job, the way that Todd Monken talks. But then he just, by all accounts, like, is throwing a lot of interceptions, and in practices, he's not great. But then you have Shedeur, who, you know, isn't great either. And, you know, I think that it's going to wind up being Deshaun. I think they're like, okay, we're going to give him one more crack. I think Monken trusts a veteran guy a little bit more, and they want to see if, okay, if he can, you know, just take care of things and manage and put them in positions. But it's not great, and it's not going to be for the full season. Eventually, at some point, Shedeur is going to wind up taking over. And down in Atlanta, I mean, if Penix was healthy, from everything I've heard and from what we've seen, I think it would be him, because Tua just looks so bad. But they kind of almost have no choice but to roll with Tua right now, because they haven't had a full healthy Penix.
So I've been here, obviously we're here in D.C., Mike, and I've been bitching and moaning that it feels like training camp in general has just been on the softer side. That's what Dan Quinn's MO has been for a couple of years, and they've gotten off to kind of rotten starts because of it. But I know that's the trend line around the league, but my point is all those teams weren't disasters last year, and I would try to do things differently. But I still read every day about a new semi-catastrophic injury for each team. So kind of where are we at big picture with your study of the league in terms of training camp, difficulty, preseason activity, and yet guys are still kind of getting hurt? It reminds me of pitching debates, right, where guys pitch less but still get hurt at the same rate. Just kind of give me your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the human body, and I think that you can try different approaches, but some, you know, it's just going to happen. Injuries are part of the game. There's no way to fully prevent them. You can try to scale back. You can try to up this or that. You know, they try to tone down some of the physicality, try to listen to the bodies, and they have all the metrics and everything, but guys are just going to get hurt. And, you know, you can try to hold people out of the preseason and go with, or, you know, the team, you know, joint team practices, and hope that that simulation gives you the competition that you need to be able to evaluate. But there's nothing that's going to be perfect. And, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm getting tired of it. It's football, the whining about, you know, and guys not, you know, playing in the preseason. You got to play. You got to get ready, you know, and you're going to get hurt whether you play or whether you don't play. Somebody's going to get hurt, whether it's on practice, whether it's in a game. You just got to roll with it.
Speaking of playing in the preseason, there are two games tonight, the Raiders and the Texans on ESPN at 8 o'clock, and then the 49ers and the Chargers, the late-night game on NFL Network. Sounds like Fernando Mendoza for an entire first half for the Raiders, the number one pick, the Heisman Trophy winner. What are we hearing at a Raiders camp on how he's looked?
They like what they're seeing from him. Not handing him the job yet, but they are working on each week, each practice, throwing a little bit something else at him to try to see how he handles the pressure, how he handles and responds to certain situations. And Clint Kubiak is a pretty conservative guy when it comes to, you know, he doesn't gush But he has spoken positively about what he's seen from Mendoza. And I know their plan was, let's start Cousins and we'll roll with him for as long as we can until Mendoza's ready. But Mendoza's steadily getting some reps with the first team here and there throughout practices and trying to do everything he can to force his way into this job. It's going to be interesting to see how it happens for the rest of the preseason and the regular season. But the door is not shut on him starting.
How much better are the Giants going to be this year?
I don't know. I think that they're going to play hard. I think that John Harbaugh is going to get a lot out of them, but they're still young and they still have a really big question about quarterback. And so I don't know that they're going to win a whole lot more games. I think they will be able to put pressure on teams and make things interesting a little bit better than what they have been. But it's a process, and they have a lot of young guys who are trying to learn how to win in the NFL. But Harbaugh and them, I think he's good for that team. You just want to see the process of them improving as the season goes on.
You had a piece, The Athletic did, that you co-authored about Roger Goodell saying there's no doubt the NFL is going to eventually have teams outside of the United States. Do you buy that?
I mean, eventually it could be like 50 years from now, but it's not going to be anytime soon. There's a whole lot that goes into that. They don't have a team that's got a stadium. You know, I mean, that's what it would take. And then the whole NFL Players Association and the owners, there's a lot of different areas that they would have to negotiate and hammer out before this would become a thing. So I asked around a lot, and a lot of people were just like, yeah, well, I mean, maybe one day, but nobody gets the sense that this is even 5-10 years from now. They were hoping when they started this international series up that within 15 years they'd be ready for this, and we still don't have a team that's full-time anywhere, so it's going to be a long time before, but they're going to keep on trying to grow the game. I just don't know yet if there's anywhere that can fully support a full-time team.
Mike, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
All right, see you guys. Thanks.
You got it, man. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. Okay, Ethan Cadeau, Associated Press, joins us to talk about the local 53. Who's playing this weekend? Who's out?
Yeah, it seems like most of the starters are playing, but there's a laundry list, like you just mentioned, of guys who are out. Rashad White's out. Trey Amos is out. Nick Allegretti's out. Johnny Newton just had surgery today. He's out. Obviously, Tunsil's out. So that's just, what, seven guys I listed right now. Seems like pretty much all the other starters are going to play. DQ today was very non-committal about whether Jaden was going to play. I think that's the biggest question mark, but it seems like of the non-injured starters, pretty much all of them are going to go, besides maybe Jaden. We don't know, and I'm not sure we'll find out till a couple hours before kickoff.
Would you play Daniels in this game?
So at the beginning of the week, I was leaning towards yes. I feel like they should get him some live reps. I think obviously the joint practices are great, but there's nothing that can replace, you know, just like the real reps, real football. But seeing him take all of the first and second team reps this week in practice with Mariota not there leads me to believe he's not going to play. And with Allegretti out as well, I think they might have a little bit of PTSD from last year, the end of that Seattle game. There's no reason for him to be in there. He goes in there and gets hurt. I feel like they're playing a little bit cautious with him, so I'd be surprised. Or I'm leaning towards he's not going to play. I don't think I'd be surprised, but I'm leaning towards he's not going to.
What's going on with the running backs? Rashad White got ice poured on him, so there's something there. McNichols is out for a little while. Did Bill tweak something today? Like, what gives here?
Yeah, Bill tweaked something today, but he didn't seem like it was serious. He said he wanted to play on Saturday, so I would say of the three, he is the one that I'm least concerned about. Rashad White was out there at practice today. He didn't really participate, but he was in uniform. They quickly debunked the ice bucket theory. I'm not sure what happened. Dan Quinn said it was the last play of the joint practice, so I'll take him for his word. But I think the conspiracy is pretty funny, though.
Yeah, the video is pretty clear that he, like, slips, and it's probably nothing, but that's certainly what a lot of people
think happened
behind the scenes. What do you make of the center position for them and whether or not it's an issue?
Oh, it's 100% an issue. I think it was an issue the second they decided to part ways with Biotic. I mean, I'm not here to say he was the perfect center, but he was pretty good at the position. Maybe he doesn't play the position the way they want to run it under the new offensive scheme, but he was definitely the best option they had by far. I think Nick Allegretti can be a solid center. I don't think he has like a Pro Bowl ceiling at the position. And he's practiced, what, 1-2 times this entire training camp? Like, if Allegretti's healthy, I don't think Good Jones even makes the roster. So I think it's 100% an issue. And if Allegretti is not healthy for week one, for whatever that reason may be, I'm not sure the week one center is on the roster at this point, which to me is very concerning as you're installing a completely new offense that is under center with the quarterback.
Who's going to have a bigger role than people are anticipating maybe on defense?
I this might be a cop-out answer, but I think after last year, a lot of people were lower on Frankie Louvu. Just he had that great year in 2024. Last year, maybe he was playing a little bit out of position, couldn't replicate that same success. This is the guy who I think is going to wear the green dot. He's been doing it in practice. I mean, all the guys have, but he seems like the guy who's actually going to do it on game day. And I think he's going to have a really good season. Him playing alongside Sonny and Leo Chanel should definitely help. So I'm really excited to watch him this year and see if he can return to that 2024 form where I'm pretty sure he was second team all pro. Like, he was really good that year. So hopefully he can return to that form.
Thank you. Much appreciated as always, Ethan.
Yeah, good talking with you guys.
You as well. Speaking of talking to guys, I talked to Josh Connerly out at training camp today. You'll hear the interview that I did with the starting right tackle of the team. I want to talk about his camp because I think it's been up and down and the expectations going into the season for him. He's a guy that I'm still not completely sold on having a monster season, but he certainly got all the physical traits and tools that you're looking for as a former first-round pick. That's next on The Fan. Taking you up to 6:30 on this Thursday, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. I'm on Twitter at Grant Paulson, no H these days.
No H. That H is for somebody else, not Jeeps.
I'm on Instagram at Grant H Paulson. Been trying to do more Instagramming, less Xing. Xing just, don't get me wrong, I'm still there.
Okay.
I still post.
Okay.
It just feels like an endangered species a little bit, doesn't it?
I don't know. It's all the same to me, but I basically said I'm...
Oh, I think it stinks on ice.
Well, I realize every time I have something that someone might be able to disagree with, and it just descends very, very quickly. You know the replies to it?
Oh, that I'm not concerned it's always about, just, but yes.
I don't mean like, I disagree. Well, here's my reasoning for that. It's I don't know where they come from. I don't know who they are, but it's like, you know, the thing that you're insecure about, it's worse than you think, and you suck. And if you just weren't around, it'd be better.
No, Twitter's always been a cesspool. I don't even mean that. I just mean in general. I feel like, I just feel like the app's the worst that it's ever been for me, by far.
Interesting.
I can't find, like, I don't know if yours is updated. Find the things you liked.
Oh.
Can you do that right now?
It takes a second. I have to click on more things than I'd like to.
What a gigantic pain in the ass that is.
Yeah, so
everything that I liked about Twitter at some point has gotten worse. Every feature, everything, it's like they're... If I didn't know any better, I would assume they're purposefully trying to ruin it.
Well, that's always been my feeling about whatever the app or social media, whatever it is, the instant I'm comfortable and know where everything is, they're like, here's another change. Oh, now I don't know where I can find the thing. So your likes, for example, are in history. Why? I don't know why. They put it there. They used to be just right there. You can I just find it? I
want to
find
the heart. Click it. Yeah. There it is.
I want to see what it is.
It's the way Dad did it. It's the way Grandpa did it. It's the way Uncle Johnny did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the way Brother Tony does it for some reason. Like, name a thing that was good about that app.
Yep.
It's worse. Now, I'm not punting. I'm not moving along. I'm still there. But it's just not as fun for me. Yeah. So wherever you are on social media, we're there. Find us. Follow us. Means a lot. Thank you. Very sweet of you. We appreciate you. And if you can send us chocolate chip cookies, we'll take those too. I'm not asking for chocolate chip cookies.
No one is sitting here asking for chocolate chip cookies. That would be weird and wrong.
It's not something we would do on this radio program.
But if they were here, who'd be really happy? Raise your hands.
Darius raised his hand.
Darius raised his hand.
Danny raised
I raised
his
my
hand.
Hand.
I raised my hand.
Toby didn't raise his hand, by the way.
I can't see. He's blocked by computers. Is he still over there?
He's over there.
Okay.
He didn't raise his hand. That was like kind of 8 Mile style, where it's like everybody from the 313, he didn't put his hand up.
You forget about Toki. He doesn't eat anything other than meals. He does not snack. It's the weirdest thing in the world.
That is true.
Toby eats meals.
Meals.
But does not eat any snacks. Chips are not interesting. Cheez-Its, pretzels, nothing. He's not interested.
He waits to the meal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a strange thing?
It is. It is a little odd.
How long have you done it that way, by the way, Toby? As a kid, did you do that? Like, you never had little snacks throughout the day?
No, my entire life.
Just three squares and that's it.
And how hardened are you on this?
I mean, I'll snack if something's out there. Like, if someone brought cookies by, I'd eat a cookie. But it's not like I'm searching one out.
But on a normal day, it's totally fair to say you would not, like, go home and just eat some pretzels or...
The amount of times that chips have been bought for me in my lifetime and then I never open that bag of chips and throw it away is more than I can count.
Never open that bag of chips.
What a thing to say.
I mean, Temptation Island, the siren calls right there, that crunchy, salty joy. And you're like, not for me.
What a thing to say. Yeah, he's a meal guy. Josh Connerly needs to be a block the guy in front of him guy this year.
We need that guy.
In a big, big way. Without Laramie Tunsil, a little more pressure on Connerly to grow up real fast. Caught up with him at training camp today and asked him how he feels things are going as the fans are no longer out at practice, that they're not blaring the music from the speakers in the same way. How do you keep the intensity up as camp continues without fans now?
Just competing, We all have a job to do out here. We just go out here and execute and get our minds right. So, yeah.
You guys had the joint practice last week against Miami that helps get you up to speed. Didn't play in the game. No joint practice this week. We're still not sure what's going to happen in the game. But how do you feel about your kind of readiness at this point as you close in on the start of the regular season?
I feel like I'm ready to go.
Are you, as far as like game activity, do you benefit from that or do you get enough work in the joint practices?
No, I mean, I feel like game gives you a little taste of what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like getting game reps is good, too.
As far as camp goes, you guys are operating against a new defense. Yeah. They brought in a lot of pass rushing talent, and Durante moves those guys around. Right. How do you feel like that's gone, getting a look at one of the more exotic groups in the league?
Yeah, no, it's definitely helped me a lot. I feel like across the board, it's helped us a lot, too, just going against a lot of movement and lots of different people in lots of different places. So once we play a similar team that runs a similar defense, we'll just, be adapted to it. So,
you talked early in camp about your offseason. Yeah. Did a lot of work with Laramie and obviously came back in incredible shape. Had some goals, I'm sure, to start the season. Yeah. How did you feel like the offseason execution, what you did as a plan, like affected your camp and just helped you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like stepped out into camp a lot more ready, physically and mentally, spiritually. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like every way that I could have been better, I was, and still improving every day. And that's my goal. So,
Josh Connerly on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Specific to losing Laramie on the left side and Brandon now coming in, it's so far away from where you're at on the offensive line. You may not feel it directly, but you tell me, he's a gravitational guy. He's one of the best tackles ever. How does that affect you, if at all?
I mean, obviously, it affected me a lot when he first went down. Just felt really bad for him because it sucks to see, like, all the work get put in, and then it kind of just goes out the window in like, a snap of the finger, you know what I'm saying? So that sucked. But, I mean, not having him on the field is, I mean, it's kind of detrimental to everybody around our offense, changes a few things. But not really. I mean, BC's a good player as well, and he's played high-level left-tackle football, you know what I'm saying? And he'll be just fine. And, we're praying that LT gets back when he can, but, there's no rush.
Yeah, the human element's obvious, right, as a buddy. I'm more thinking of, like, football, right tackle versus left tackle. And I guess your point is you plug in Brandon, which makes sense. But do you see any difference in terms of defensive fronts or anything like that without him on the field?
No, not really. I mean, when it comes to rushers, like, rushers are going to rush where they're comfortable at. They're going to rush over the left tackle or over the right tackle no matter where they're comfortable. So that's how I feel.
Off the field during training camp, what were you doing to get your mind away from football and have a little peace?
Talking to my family. I feel like it's the biggest thing for me. And then just recovering, I feel like that's the biggest thing is making sure my body's right. And I feel like that as long as I get up in the morning and I feel good, that's peace to me.
do you jump on the laptop in the hotel or whatever and try to binge TV shows, or what kind of entertainment do you enjoy?
Yeah, I've watched a few TV shows over the past couple months, some good ones on Netflix and so, but really just watch some film too. Make sure I'm right on that part too. So yeah,
appreciate you, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely, appreciate you.
There's Josh Connerly. I think he's actually sneaky one of the most important players on the team this year, because he's a guy that the disconnect between, in my opinion, what he's capable of, what could be, and what I've seen so far is a pretty big gap. Last year, he got off to the really rough start, and I think we've mostly chalked that up to going up against just elite edge rushers every single week for a month. And as the year went on, to his credit, he got better and better and better. But you look back at the totality of the season, and for a first-round tackle, it was fine. You know, a little bit underwhelming to fine.
Mm-hmm.
So then he has this big offseason, and he comes back in incredible shape. He's still got the baby face and looks like a child, you know, in the face. I mean, it's amazing. But he has gotten bigger and stronger and kind of leaned out and did a really, really good offseason program with Laremy Tunsil and on his own. But at training camp, again, I'm not pretending to be a scout. I always acknowledge I see what I see, and it's my opinion, and maybe I'm not completely right on this, but I would say he has been, at best, I would say, inconsistent. You know, but it's been up and down throughout camp, where guys like Joshua Josephs, who you'll hear from next hour, who's had a hell of a camp, the rookie out of Tennessee, like he gets after him physically with his length and his physicality and just being able to bull rush him. He really struggles with bull rushes, to me, with powerful guys like that. And
that, to me, was kind of the big thing that needed to improve. It
exactly.
Was, we knew that coming in, right? So, hey, this is an unfinished product. That's a raw mold of clay, but great feet. There's a thing that a lot of tackles or a lot of guards will never have, and that's Josh Connerly's feet. His ability to move quickly and, you know, those the different shuttle drills and kind of that cheat code that a lot of the scouts and the Twitterati will talk about among linemen. If you're able to do this shuttle in this amount of time, there's a great correlation with NFL success. And he's got that athleticism, but the strength part isn't there. You go, no problem. That's something that's easier to grow than athleticism. Has it happened yet? And how does it manifest itself for him as a player? Strength helps you, yes, but now do we have the technique to kind of match it? This is a huge year for him because it ain't easy.
And that gets me back to kind of my big picture point on him, which is I wanted to go to training camp this year and to watch practices and go, what a leap he made. And I do not feel that way watching him. Now, it may turn out that that's exactly what happens when the lights come on and the games start. It may absolutely go that way. That's really what I'm banking on, though. Because as a first-round tackle, and I know he's not the fifth or seventh overall pick. He was much closer to the second round than that at the very end of the first round. But you're expecting a second contract, 10-year tackle, plug-and-play, guy you don't have to worry about at all. And there's still definitely a trajectory toward that. I don't want this to be an overly negative conversation. There's a leap that needs to be made here, big time. And especially after the Tunsil injury, they need him to really take a big step forward. But a really, really genuinely nice kid. Good to talk to him.
He looks so young, by the way. I know it's not the point of this, and I can't get over it.
It is wild.
Like, I know all these guys are 20, 21, 22 years old, and I'm way older, more than twice their age in most cases.
Nobody looks as young as him.
He looks like a really big kid.
He really does. He looks... this is not meant as a slight. He looks like he could play against one of your kids in sports, like in the face. He just has a baby face.
He does. I understand. This is a you know, guy in his early 20s, an NFL player. There was a kid that my 8-year-old played against in a soccer tournament, like the big kid. You look over the sideline, you see his parents, and they're twice the size of everybody else. You go, okay, he's probably somebody who accomplished something athletically at one point. And this kid was a foot taller than everybody. Like, he looked like Josh Connerly. Does that make any sense? Like, if you swap them, you go, just you swap the heads. You go, yeah, that fits.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. ESPN.com had a piece they wrote, 2027 NFL quarterback predictions. They went through 16 teams with QB questions as to what's going to happen at those spots this year and what the long-term play is. I want to go through some of those that I find intriguing next on the Fan. Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on the Fan. There is preseason football tonight. It is August 20th. The NFL season is just around the corner. ESPN.com's Dan Graziano did a piece on 16 different teams that have varying degrees of quarterback questions. And so the way they went about it was they wrote up the room as it is. Then they went with the most likely outcome coming out of the season and then a long shot outcome. So I just want to go through some of those. For the Arizona Cardinals, who go into the year with Jacoby Brissett, you're going to see Carson Beck at some point. He says the most likely outcome is that the Cardinals secure a very high pick in the 2027 draft and use it on one of the highly touted quarterbacks in the class, someone they believe can be a franchise cornerstone. I guess the longer shot for them would be Beck looks good enough that they feel like he can be a starter at least initially in 27. You pass on a quarterback and you take a tackle or somebody to help him out. I wouldn't completely rule that out, but I think that's correctly a long shot. Makes way more sense that you would be trying to draft a quarterback in the top 10 in what looks like it's going to be a heavy quarterback draft.
Yeah, if you're up there, it's hard to pass that up. Or you trade back and get a million different picks from it to enhance that roster. But it's not a terrible quarterback landing spot. I don't know how good their offensive line is. I will admit to not having studied the ins and outs of Paris Johnson and Isaac Suamalo. But with Marvin Harrison still hasn't fulfilled all the promise yet, but there's a reason he was as highly touted as he was. Michael Wilson broke out last year. All the running backs you could shake a stick at with some talent there, and maybe the best pass-catching tight end in football, Trey McBride, that's not a bad spot for a quarterback to go.
They have great weapons.
Yeah.
Good use of to go, by the way. Dan Quinn would like that.
I meant it, like, that's not a bad place to go. Like, actually saying to go. Like, I would go there. Do you want to get that to go? He just says to go, like, the Smurf said Smurf.
He just adds it onto a sentence.
To go.
To go. All right.
Grant's doing this segment to go.
How about the Atlanta Falcons? Most likely outcome, Tagovailoa starts the season, struggles, they go to Penix. Then he says the new front office and coaching staff that took over following the 25 season select a quarterback early in the 27 draft, either to develop behind Penix or to replace him if Atlanta has decided he isn't the answer. So the shot clock starting on Michael Penix already. Yeah. It sounds like part of that is injuries. I believe he's got three ACLs now.
Yes.
Over the career, dating all the way back to when he was a quarterback at Indiana. But he also, when he's played, he's been okay. Like there haven't been a whole lot of deposits to he's definitely the guy. You can normally see pretty quickly with a Daniels you saw it, with a Williams you saw it, even though he struggled in his rookie year. Like the flashes were super bright. Drake May, obviously you saw it. You haven't seen enough of those from Penix, who's got a big-time arm. He can be pretty accurate, but it doesn't quite look like franchise quarterback regularly enough.
No, a little too much Zach Robinson in his first year, a guy that they were right to move on from as the offensive coordinator. But yes, the injuries is the big part. That's the biggest deal. That was my biggest concern about him coming out. But to me, you combine injuries with, as you said, not great performance, not a great situation. He might turn into an afterthought. It tells you how quickly it goes from all the promise in the world to, yeah, we're already shopping for our next.
Here's an interesting one. The Carolina Panthers with current starter Bryce Young signed through 2027. They're going to be in a Tua situation, I think, with him. And Tua put up way bigger, better numbers. He obviously had Mike McDaniel helping him out and Tyreek Hill running routes with Jalen Waddle. Very different in Carolina. But what I mean by that is, if a guy shows just enough that you don't want to let them walk after you draft them at the very top of the board, in Carolina's case, you're talking about number one overall, that you give them that big extension. What Graziano wrote actually was that the Panthers most likely end up extending him next spring, but he said the contract could fall closer to the Daniel Jones mid-tier than the huge Dak Prescott tier.
The mega tier,
that he kicked off. I think that could happen, but there's no real precedent for top-of-the-board draft pick signing as a mid-market guy. Now, that's the real issue in the quarterbacking class structure. Yep. There's no middle class. It's like you make all the money or you don't make any money. They're starting to become that Daniel Jones, kind of Cousins at the end of his career, like middle tier, which is a good thing. But there's not a precedent for a guy that went first overall on a second contract signing in that tier.
No, and again, we talked about this previously when it came to certain quarterbacks as they're up for their extension. One of the worst things you can do in sports in general, but especially in a position that has such outsized influence and amount of salary cap, is pay for great and not get great. If you have Pat Mahomes, whatever it costs, take my money. If I have Josh Allen, take my money. Whatever number you write down is appropriate, right? But if you have, fill in the blank, a guy that's just okay, if you have, I don't know, maybe you could pick it, call Bryce Young. You cannot overpay and just get okay production. Somebody's going to say, we're going to rather move on from that guy. Maybe this is the new version of that, where we're not going to move on from you, but we don't think you could do a lot better than what we'll offer you. Let's try to, you know, thread that needle.
The easiest one, I think, to predict is the Browns, because you can just bank on both guys falling on their face. Deshaun Watson to open the season, ESPN says. The team loses a lot of games. They go to Shedeur Sanders, who takes over. The Browns finish with one of the worst records in the league. Neither of these guys is in the mix to start next year. Armed with two first-round picks, by the way, don't forget that. They have two first-rounders. They secure one of the best quarterbacks in the class this coming spring, hoping they've finally found their long-term answer. Now, who that is, I don't know, but if you have two ones, there's no reason. If you're desperate enough, you couldn't go all the way up the board. Maybe you don't get the first pick, but you know, if you have like the fourth and the, I don't know, 23rd pick or something, mm-hmm. you could turn that into pick number two, maybe. They could definitely get one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
Without question. And they're in that marketplace again for the millionth time out of a million years. That is one team that simply has never gotten this right.
Other interesting teams in terms of future at quarterback, he lists the Detroit Lions. I think Jared Goff probably ends up just being there for a while. He signed through 28. Maybe he gets another extension. He's only 32. Played at a really, really high level under Dan Campbell. Houston Texans with C.J. Stroud. That one's very interesting because he's a year closer to free agency yep. than like Jaden Daniels. And he's had one really good year. And then it'd be the equivalent of Daniels having another year that's not great this year or something, where it's like one amazing, oh my God, I can't wait to pay you. Two that don't look like that. What do you do? Graz writes that Houston ends up rewarding him if he plays well with a long-term contract extension this offseason, most likely.
Well, the other addition to that narrative, the sprinkling on top, is the one of the most high-profile, everybody's watching, oh my gosh, this guy can't get out of his own way type things. I don't think that's a fair view of C.J. Stroud, right? That playoff game, he was so terrible, and they lost it because of him. It ignores any kind of other good deposit that he may have had. He hadn't had a great situation in terms of his receiver health and the like, but he still needs to put in a better performance than that. They would have been better if they handed it off twice and punted.
He hasn't, but he's had a ton of receiver talent around him too, I would say. The Rams and Matt Stafford, how long does he play is basically the question. They've also now got life after him lined up, it would appear, with you know, the draft pick that they just made. Actually, a really good first start as well, coming out of the draft. After picking the Alabama quarterback last year, Ty Simpson, Miami Dolphins, Malik Willis, most likely outcome, according to Graziano, is they're looking for a quarterback in 27. The Vikings, does Kyler Murray prove himself worthy of a contract after the one-year deal? McCarthy probably ends up getting traded. The Jets look ticketed for a quarterback next year in the draft. The Eagles, I think, are really interesting because there's no reason to believe Jalen Hurts won't be there for the next 9 years or whatever, but he's only under contract through 28. And I still think it's super weird that they handpicked an offense that doesn't fit him at all. Like, they're trying to fix and change a guy that has been to two Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl. But they're telling you, we don't really like the way he does it. They're trying to do it a completely different way. So that's something to monitor after the rumblings of him being at odds with the staff going into the end of last season. The Steelers, one last ride for Aaron Rodgers, might not have the future quarterback on their roster. So a lot of these are kind of fun to kick around a little bit. One other I would throw in there is the Bucks. I mean, Baker Mayfield's contract expires, didn't get an extension. My guess is he plays well and they franchise him. But there's a world where Baker Mayfield hits free agency this offseason.
Yeah, I don't think he's full disgruntled. I think he's gruntled at the moment. Like, that didn't go like he thought it was going to go.
He seems pretty disgruntled.
Yeah, I mean, as well as he played for them, you don't want to be in any kind of long-term business with me at this point, or, you know, again, it's kind of that face-off. And they may be in transition, too, as they've gotten older and older. They had that face-off with Vita Vea that just resulted in a one-year, $30 million deal. That's not long-term. You'll notice I said 1 year. You get a lot of money for it, but maybe they might feel like the bottom might fall out of a roster that was kind of holding on with some bubble gum.
I'm going to give you the top five guys that have impressed me the most throughout training camp, which kind of effectively wrapped up yesterday with the end of public practices. Fans out there for the final time in Ashburn. Joshua Josephs is on that list. You'll hear an interview I did with him today after practice next on G&D.